I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let the fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast.
Speaker Nation, welcome to another episode of Public Speaking Secrets. I'm your host, Victor Ahipeni. Super excited to have you here. And we've got someone who's going to fire you up. We've got Jason Jordan, who is the founder of firestory.com. And he has a plethora, I really like that word, of late. of sales, marketing, business development experience that he has combined with an MBA and combined with finding a niche between generationals that has allowed him to launch his dream career as a professional speaker. And I know a lot of you out there are on that road as well. So I'm super excited to have him here and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Victor. Thank you for having me.
It's Fire Story. Where did the name come from? What does it symbolize? How did you kind of get to that point?
Well, fantastic question right out of the gate. As you know, and as you mentioned before, I had been doing a lot of work with generations. And one of the things that I found that really tied all of them together, whether they're, I don't know if you guys have the same sort of generational divides there in Australia that we do, but we've got baby boomers are kind of the older people, and then Generation X is my generation, and then the youngsters are the millennials. And really what connects all of them effectively is story. And so I started doing some research more into story, and I came across this book that was talking about the Kalahari Bushmen and some of the earliest examples of human culture on the planet. And the way the archaeologists think it happened was that a long time ago, you know, before we fire, all communication was very tactical in nature. We would merely describe where the food was, where the action was, where the enemy was, whatever that was. And then as soon as the sun went down, we had to seek shelter, right? We had to seek shelter for warmth. We had to get away from predators. We had to protect ourselves, whatnot. And then when we learned to control fire, the day got extended. People could stay out later. The fire provided warmth that provided a common meeting place for people to gather. They could cook their food. They could be protected from the nighttime predators. And so it was around these fires that people began to discuss more than just tactical things. They started to talk about ideas and visions and new things that they wanted to try and accomplish. And they say that it was around these fires that the first human culture started to develop. And so Fire Story is a bit of a nod to these ancient round the fire talks where people, where we as humans really kind of learn to connect and share for the first time. And I believe that continues even today. I don't know if you ever go out camping or something like that, but there's nothing more fun than gathering around a fire with some good friends, and you just relax, and all of a sudden great ideas start coming out, and it connects us in pretty profound ways.
And with that, what does Fire Story do? Yeah, what do you do within Fire Story, and what does your business, I guess, solve?
Okay. So as far as Fire Story goes, a Fire Story is a name I give for something that is more than just a normal story. It's more than just one of those funny stories that we share. A Fire Story is really a story about change. And most businesses were founded around a fire story. It was, if you've ever started your own business, you know how hard it is, you know what a struggle it is. You know what a risk it is. You know, a lot of great people are giving up a regular paycheck and some of the stability there to go off on their own and take a big risk. And they do it because of something they believe. And it's almost always a story that gave birth to that belief. And it's a story that those core few gathered around and they shared regularly. And things got going in a business around the story. But then all of a sudden, the business takes off and it starts to grow. And you start acquiring new people and you start acquiring different divisions. And this is the business development guy. And this is the marketing guy. And this is the finance person. And as it grows, these people become more and more distant from that story. And next thing you know, you've got a whole company full of people who are just there exchanging their hours for dollars. There's no real connection to the cause. And so we started getting together these ideas of like mission statements and statements of value and core values and things like that. And none of those really, in my opinion, capture the essence of what drove the story fundamentally, what drove the business at the core level, what kept people there all night and sacrificing at a base level to fight for a cause. And I really believe that sharing that story among even some others as the business develops is key to keeping that close-knit feel and that cause and bringing the right people on board that are willing to fight for you, that aren't willing to leave just because somebody offers them, you know, a couple of extra dollars per hour more or this or that benefit. They're willing to stick it out long-term.
I love that because, I mean, you look at, say, Zappos, for example, you know, they create the environment of, hey, look, we'll pay you to leave the company if you don't think it's working out. They have the driving factors and it might not be about money. It might be about learning more within your job, or it might be progressing in certain ways or developing yourself as a person. And I mean, I know those aren't necessarily a story that drives it, but it's that overall culture that, you know, I know, and it can be I'm a trained physiotherapist, and people will, you know, there's not a lot of difference between one job and another because a lot of your earning is capped on how many patients you can see. So you go to another place, you're going to see the same amount. But I've worked at places that have had that, yeah, a lot more than that mission statement, which gets forgotten. You know, it's a thing that, you know, I see you've done your MBA. It's like, okay, we need to do a mission statement and we need to do a SWOT analysis. Like, yeah, it's almost a buzzword at times. Particularly,
it's almost a punchline at times, you know?
And you see these companies, and one place I worked, we weren't the most highly paid, but they ticked off core things that a lot of physiotherapists look for. Like, we had a lot of training, and there's a lot of alpha personalities that want to know more within their industry rather than necessarily earn more. Yeah, we weren't getting underpaid by any stretch, but it was, you're going to enjoy work more if you're continually challenging yourself every week rather than chasing an extra $100 a week, for going somewhere else. And it was kind of the thing that, the more we knew, the better we could make our patients, the more those patients would come back to us, the more we'd have a better clientele, and it all really fed in. So, I mean, I love what your company's all about. When it comes to, I guess, getting that or developing that message, because storytelling is behind everything. You know, you watch the best talks online, storytelling. You watch the best, you know, political races, and it's who can tell the best story, sometimes true or not true, but regardless, it's the ones who can develop the best story and lead people into, you know, a future paced ideal or something that's going to be for benefit of everybody. Have you got, I guess, frameworks around how you look to develop these stories that, I guess, get people, you know, cross-generational and things all on board together?
Yeah, it's often a challenge because surprisingly, we tend to hide some of these more compelling stories. And, you know, it's no surprise. All social media seems to have caught on to this idea that storytelling is so key. Like Facebook, you know, if you look at the top there, it says, oh, such and such has added to their story. And that term story is thrown around so often. But, you know, if you've spent any time on Facebook, you scroll through hundreds of people and all of their stories seem to be pretty much the same. It's everything is hunky-dory. And here's my 2.5 children and my beautiful husband and fantastic wife. And here we are in Fiji and everything's just magical. And as we know, that that's not the truth. That's not the real story. Stories have conflict, right? Stories have challenges that people have to overcome. Otherwise, that'd be a really boring story if it was just perfect all the time. And so oftentimes what I find is I literally have to pull it out of people. I have to sit down as part of sometimes one-on-one coaching, sometimes corporate coaching. There are some companies I work with, and I won't work with a company usually on an individual basis. I insist on working with the entire company because I want everybody experiencing the story as it starts to come out. And it takes some pulling, and you got to break down barriers and these silos and these walls that we build up over time. But as people feel safe and they start talking about their experiences, what they've done for customers, what they've done in their divisions, and the challenges that they face, people start feeling more and more connected and more open. And I mean, great things happen when you can break down those barriers and reach those people. But man, you got to tear down the wall if you follow my meaning. You got to break through.
And I think it's a really good point that a lot of people misunderstand with stories is, like you said, they'll tell the perfect story in the regards of everything's perfect. This is great. You know, this is what our company strives to do. And they're either not differentiating themselves. Like, look, we started out doing what everybody else did and getting the results everybody else got. And it wasn't until we made this shift, which took a lot of heartache and turmoil and blah, blah, blah. And now we're at this place where we can do this. Or, you know, the hero story where they have success and then have failure and then have success. People can buy into that and relate and join that roller coaster of emotions. And then, you know, they want to fight for your team. They want to, whether it be a customer or a staff member, they want to be behind something that's more than just, fluffy words, put together nicely that says, we're great. You know, we can do everything you want.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the history of, take a pretty common company that everybody knows, like Apple, right? What do people connect with? They look back to the Steve Jobs days and they talk almost with fondness about the time when Steve was fired from his own company, right? Overcoming those early boundaries of reaching out, and he reached out to the CEO or COO of Pepsi and told him, do you want to make sugar water? Do you want to come change the world? And then he came on and they ended up getting rid of Steve, the guy that founded the company, crashed and burned. I remember you could have got Apple stock for $8. And, then this magic little white box came along that would hold your music. And they started building from there and fighting against all this. I think we've reached a point now where Apple has reached such a level of success that people can't connect anymore with the struggle. And I think competitors are starting to capitalize on that. They don't have that compelling visionary leader anymore. And so the story has gotten watered down. I remember when people used to tune in to see Steve Jobs pitch the next product that, by God, you were going to buy. whether you had the money or not. And man, now it's just bunch of talking heads out there talking about pixel density and the amount of, you know, memory, and it's 1/10 of a millimeter thinner, but it's gonna cost you $1,200. Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot, guys.
It's what was it? 500 songs in your pocket or whatever. Like, yeah, he sold a solution to people who were sitting there, rather than, you know, everyone else was selling MP3 players. He was selling 500 songs in your pocket. I'm not an Apple. I don't own anything Apple, but I love his autobiography. I love following the stuff that he did and watching his presentations and things like that, because you can see the masterist in it. I spoke with another guest the other day who was talking about, we're talking about competition, and we got to the point that I don't think that there's many companies out there that truly have competition. Apple's probably one of them. They've got, you know, Samsung, and it's not necessarily a 50-50 split, but they're competing directly on the same product. The majority of us aren't. We're never going to be able to service the world as a whole. So there's an abundance of clients or customers or whatever you want to call it for us. Let me dive into it for, I guess, the speakers out there. You said you go into companies and corporations and you work with their teams. What are the steps? I mean, it might be at a point now where, you know, they come to you, but when you were first starting out, how were you getting that foot in the door with some of these companies, and how were you proving that the problem you solved was the solution you offered was a problem that they had? Because a story's, it's not arbitrary, but it's not a, we're going to decrease your costs by 20%. Like, yeah, there's a lot of intrinsic value in it, but it's not necessarily something, I guess, easy for a lot of companies to see, particularly, you know, even 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, man, you're absolutely right about that. And I came from a sales world where everything was ROI driven, right? Let me sit down with you, Mr. Customer, and show you ROI and hard dollars. You buy our product, we're going to save you X amount of dollars. And now I'm in this very sort of nebulous world where I'm selling something that has value, but you can't put a number on it. And you can't put an exact value on it. And that is a challenging scenario. It really is. All of the evidence is there. When you look at the levels of satisfaction that people have with their work, with their career, with their companies, the amount of turnover there is these days, the amount of time that millennials, that youngest generation, will actually spend with a company, all the evidence is there pointing to a big problem that people are not connecting with, you know, whether it's internal or external. I mean, there's a ton of competition out there. And so it's easy to compete on price. Just go on Amazon and be the cheaper guy.
Yeah.
So the evidence is all out there that people want to connect. But you know, like anything else, I have to put myself out there. I have to talk, whether it's paid or not. I have to make my case, make my argument, and some CEOs will get it and some won't. Some will say, you know, where's the hard dollar evidence? I say, you know, some people will try to make stuff up for you. I'm not going to do that. If you don't get it, that's all right. I'll move on to the next one. But you start off with that first one who gets it and will give you a shot. And you go ahead and blow them away. Make their people super happy. Make their people ecstatic to be a part of it. Get I've had people at companies who have handed me their letters of resignation, like they were on their way out the door, and they tore them up in front of me saying, you know what, I think I see now what's happening with this. And you start collecting those bits of data, and I mean, like a little snowball rolling down a hill, it starts to pick up momentum and pick up speed as people just start to see what it can do. I wish I had a hard ROI that I could show people, but in the end, it's you got to take a leap of faith.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good lesson for a lot of people is getting, you know, just not over-delivering, just delivering to somebody who's willing to give you a shot. Like, you know, whether you believe in over-delivering or not, but, you know, whatever you say you're going to do, do it really well and show them, you know, hey, there is a benefit. This is going to shift your company, and then, you know, leverage off them and say, look, I've heard of people say, look, I'm going to come and speak to your company at a discount or free. What I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to deliver everything I say. At the end of it, what you're going to do is you're going to recommend me to three other companies and you're going to give me a glowing testimonial on the proviso that I do deliver. And, you know, if you can get that, then it helps in spades. Obviously, if you can prove that direct ROI and drop their costs by 20%, that certainly helps as well. But I mean, I think for a lot of speakers out there, they've got, you know, if you're a motivational mindset, a lot of those things, do create change within a company, but it's like going to the gym for a day. You don't necessarily see it. We don't see it after the first day, but yeah.
Not after one day. No. Yeah. You're right. And it does get to be a challenge in some respects, in that those early customers who believe in you and give you a shot and you enter in an arrangement with them at a lower price, the challenge that you have is as you start to pick up momentum and pick up more customers and you start to command higher rates and higher dollars for what it is you do, those early guys still have a tendency to value you at the discounted level that you engaged with them at. Mm-hmm. And so you have some tough decisions to make. Do you owe them? In which case you keep going at the price that they're willing to pay, or do you say, hey, I'm sorry, but this is what I'm commanding now, and this is what it's going to have to be. That's a tough decision to make.
Yeah. And with your, like you go into a organization, a company, you help them, you know, help them craft some certain things initially up front. What do you have for like session models or continuation of working with those companies, after say the first period that you've worked with them?
Yeah. So it's great that you bring that up, because for a long time, I was a keynoter. You know, I would get up in front of conferences or companies and I'd get people really jazzed up for the length of that conference, and the tail was really short. It would last for a couple of days. That enthusiasm, that momentum would only last for a couple of days. And then people would be right back doing the exact same thing that they've always done. And so I kind of made a decision at that point that what I was looking for was less of an upfront, less of a, you know, $10,000, $20,000 keynote, and more of a, okay, I want to, let's spread that out over a year or something like that, because I want to work with your people consistently, like every week, give me a chunk of your company and cycle these people through, because I want to chip away at their paradigm, their whatever ideas that they have over time, and break through those shells and break through those barriers and open them up, basically. And it takes time. And so that was a decision that I made for my business. What I do takes time. And so mostly what I do now, I used to do some private coaching, but you can't, you know, at $200 an hour for private coaching or whatever that is, people can't get a lot of your hours, and they're looking to cut that very short. And so I made the decision that I wanted to work with larger groups of people for longer periods of time and just chip away at it gradually. But I think it depends on what you're offering. You know, if you have a solution that is, hey, make this change and you'll get this result, go for the keynote.
Yeah.
Mine just happens to take longer.
Yeah. And I think it's from a lot of speakers that I've talked to, I think that's a big shift that a lot of them have had is the keynote. A lot of people aim for the keynote to be the end of the journey. Like, you know, I'm trying to get a keynote presentation where, you know, a lot of highly experienced speakers I've spoken to have said it's the first step. Yeah, it's, hey, cool. Now we've delivered to this corporation. Now we can start, you know, offering training, offering, you know, different solutions in the long term. So it's really good to be able to get, like, you know, how you've managed and developed to do that. Because I think one of the problems that we all have is we have a lot of expertise. We jump up on a keynote presentation and we want to regurgitate as much of it out as we potentially can. And like you say, people get jazzed up and they get too much of the how that they become overwhelmed and, you know, we tighten the talk up. But, you know, you can't put 12 months of, you know, time where you have to do work in between it into a day or into 2 days, and being able to offer those things on an ongoing process and having, you know, potentially multiple product offerings so that once they transition through one level, they can, you know, once they've done sales, they can move towards leadership. And once they've done leadership, they can do, you know, towards marketing, whatever it may be. You can
right.
through those different layers. And I think it's something that a lot of speakers potentially lack is, you know, they say, oh, I can go and do 30 keynotes throughout the year. And I don't know about you, I don't love sitting on a plane going, you know.
Not anymore. I've got a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old, and you know, they like having dad around, and I kind of enjoy being around them right now. I'm sure one day here in the not too distant future, they'll be teenagers and they'll be looking for for dad to not be around as much. But I love being around them. And so, yeah, the keynote road warrior thing is not what I'm after anymore.
Yeah, no, I think that's cool. And on that note, I think we'll round it up now and we'll let you go and spend some time with that family of yours. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. And just want to welcome you to our Speaker Nation family. If people want to find out more about you and check out what you're doing, where can they go and what can they do?
I'm sorry. they can hit me on Twitter is an easy one, which is at Your Fire Story. That's an easy one. Also, firestory.com is my website. And I'm on most of the other usual suspects, Facebook and LinkedIn and all those. But Twitter and just going to the website and connecting with me directly are probably the easiest. And Victor, I've got a challenge for you, sir. I would like to know, and at some point, I think you should share this with your listening audience if you haven't already, is how you are, I'm sorry, you're what you told me what kind of therapist you were, but I've
physio, like a physical therapist.
So a physical therapist, does a physical therapist get into running a podcast on speaking? There's a story there. There's a story there that I can sense. And I think that would be a fascinating thing for everybody to hear.
Well, check it out next episode. My backstory will go into it. And if not, it's all written in an awesome book called PublicSpeakingSecrets.com that you can pick up. What a segue. What an accidental segue. where you can pick it up for free. You cover the shipping, I'll cover the book. And we'll also have all the show notes that we've talked about, all the links to Fire Story if you're on the road and can't pick them up. And that's at PublicSpeakingBlueprint.com. So thank you so much, Jason. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to either you coming back to Australia or I touching base on the other side of the world with you.
My pleasure, Victor. At one of these points, I'm going to drag the entire family out there, and it's going to be awesome to visit your country again.
Awesome. Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
If you want to fast track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.